Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher!
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass. We're your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get in touch with us, go to our website. info@crushperformance.com is the email. You can also get hooked up with our newsletter. You can subscribe to our podcast and just get all the hookups to the world of performance. Our job, the way we look at it, our job is to keep you on the cutting edge of performance, no matter what you're doing. You know, our platform is sport. But the lessons and the people we talk to and the things we learn in this show, it is about life. It's a human thing. Human performance. That's what it's all about, no matter what you're looking at. And if you have a topic that you'd like us to look into, please let us know. We answer every single message we get. And, you know, some of your topics have really, really got us thinking. Though we think it's our job to keep everybody out there thinking, maybe about things you wouldn't normally think about. You guys are getting us thinking, and we really, really like it. We've dedicated segments, even entire episodes, to your ideas, so please let us know. Or if it's just a personal question about you, your players, your kids, let us know. We'll do our best to answer. If we don't have the answers, I can guarantee to you, we know somebody in our network that has those answers, and we'll go to the ends of the earth to get them for you. Even one-on-one. We love it all. So please reach out. On Twitter, please follow us. At Jeff Crush is my handle. And on the social media platforms of Instagram, YouTube, and also on Facebook, just search out Crush Performance. In fact, later in the show, I'm going to share with you a very rare Crush rant. I kind of went off on terrestrial radio last week based on a question that came into the Crush mailbag from Doug talking about issues in developmental sport. And Doug's email was a response to my statement two episodes ago when we were talking with Jamie Reed, the Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers. We were talking about injury rates and the developmental models that we have out there right now and some of the issues that we're facing. Doug wrote in response to my statement when I asked, could it be possible that we're destroying more talent than we're creating in our youth developmental sport models? And it was a fantastic email. Doug got me thinking about a few things, and it set me off, and I just went on a rant. It's not bad or anything, but I'm going to share that with you, and you guys can either agree with me or you can vote me off the island, but I certainly would like to hear what you think about this topic. It's a really, really important topic. You know, we always say, look to the pros if you want to find out what you should be doing and what's going on in terms of athlete development and sport performance. We look to them to see what we should do, and sometimes we look to them to see what we shouldn't do because there's mistakes being made all over the place. That's how we progress. And some of the organizations up there, they're not afraid to try things. They're not afraid to try and fail. We have to learn from their mistakes or their failures as much as they do. It can really, really speed the developmental process. But there's so many resources at the professional level of sports, so many people involved, and there's a lot to be learned there. Unfortunately, I don't think that what we learn is really being applied at the right point in time when it comes to our developmental models. And that's what this question's all about. Again, just a classic example of how you guys get us thinking, hopefully as much as we get you thinking. And that's what Crush Performance is really all about. Getting us thinking about things we might not normally think about. And we try to connect with some of the greatest minds in the world when it comes to organizational performance, psychology, sports nutrition, science, physiology, the strength and conditioning side of it, skill acquisition, talent development. We love this stuff. I love this stuff. And though my entire world has been high performance sport and developmental sport, These last couple years have been fascinating. I've had oil companies, banks, I've had construction companies asking me to come out and speak about talent development, health, wellness. The war on sugar is a big, big topic. And so it's really cool to see how all of these areas of human performance come together, and also the common themes amongst all the areas: business, academics, music. Doesn't matter whether we're talking about sport, developmental sport, professional sport, so many common themes, and we're just loving every minute of it. So again, later in the show, we will be sharing with you a very rare Crush rant based on one of the great emails that have come into the Crush mailbag. Okay, on to current events. Well, it is an exciting time in the world of sport, no question about it. If you look what's going on right now, the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, we're in the final now. It has been a long, grinding road, and for anybody who had an NHL playoff bracket, if you're anything like me, you got destroyed in the first round. What an incredible playoffs this has been for the NHL. Upsets aside, really, really great hockey, and there are two really big, really strong teams battling it out for supremacy on the ice. Boston and St. Louis are really going to have a heck of a series coming up here. I can't wait to see how this unfolds. I can't make a call at this point because based on what we've seen in the NHL, who knows what's going to happen. But I think right now, I think the scale sort of leaning towards Boston. We'll see how that unwinds. And of course, in the NBA, we're at the final as well. It's too bad these championships line up against each other. I don't like it. I wish the timing would be a little bit off. It's too much. It's too much for one man. The NBA championship and the Stanley Cup final lining up against each other. Come on. Who's planning this stuff? We got to do a better job there. It is honestly too much, but I can't wait. I'm going to try to get it all in. I love this stuff. You know, how did these guys get there? How are they going to play when they're there? And again, the NBA, the Raptors, congratulations to them. They've got a really, really uphill battle against the Warriors, who are really, I think, in this day and age, sports number one dynasty in terms of success. And not necessarily just because of the championships that they've won, but because of their presence in the playoffs. They're kind of like the Dodgers in baseball. If you go back, I think the Dodgers have reached the postseason for the last 13 years consecutively. That is impressive. That goes back to sort of the run of the Atlanta Braves through the 80s into the 90s. Incredible stuff. But the Warriors are incredible to watch. How they're coached, the culture within these organizations, there's a lot to learn there. We'll watch with great, great interest. At least we'll try to take it all in. And then, of course, coming up, everybody, the Major League Draft, the future is about to be set for not just some great young talents, but also some organizations as the Major League Baseball draft comes up here in the next week or so. And the Orioles are picking number one, of course, a franchise that has been just dismal in terms of performance. It's kind of a rebirth. They cleaned house. They've got new coaching staff, new GM. They're really trying to rebuild, and they have the first overall pick. We're going to watch and see who it is. I think there's good indications that Adley Rutschman is going to be the number one overall pick. Kid from Oregon who has really, really created an unbelievable opportunity for himself. We'll be watching that with great interest. And then, of course, the NBA draft coming up on June 20th. Zion Williamson is going to be the number one pick. Hands down, that's just the way it's going to go down. And the New Orleans Pelicans are going to select him first overall on June 20th in the NBA draft. And it's going to be interesting to see. Basketball is a little different than baseball. Baseball, you need that time to develop and you get these players into your system. You have extended spring, you have low A, high A, then you have your double A, triple A, and then your major league system. And I like that system, the time to develop. And also in Major League Baseball, we know that kids can also opt, or if they have the wherewithal, if they're ready, they can sign out of high school if they're selected, or they can go through college. More kids have success once they've gone through college. But it doesn't mean you can't have success coming out of high school. Basketball is a totally different animal. You come out of college ready for the NBA. You want to go. And it's going to be interesting to see the impact one player can have on an organization that is just primed for the future. Can Zion change the landscape of the franchise? Well, we'll watch that with great interest because that's what sport is all about. And of course, you know, if we look at all these great young draft picks, you can't help but look at the top overall pick in the NFL draft, Kyler Murray, going to the Cardinals. Now, this kid is really special. And I think, you know, in football, he's going to have a bright, bright future. Interesting, though, He also went in the first round in the Major League draft, in the 2018 Major League Baseball draft to the A's. Beautiful, multi-sport athlete creating opportunities in multiple sport. So when he signed with the A's, he was going into his final year of college. And one of the stipulations when he signed with the A's for $4.4 million, I believe, for $4.66 million, whatever that number was, it was a really good sum of money. But one of the stipulations he had, he wanted to go back and play his final year at Oklahoma as quarterback. Well, he has a fantastic year, Heisman Trophy winner, and then he goes first overall in the NFL draft. This is just a fairy tale type story of sport, and I love it. And then he decides to go the NFL route. So now he's got to go through all the business of separating with the A's and paying back their money and go headfirst into the NFL. I absolutely love it, creating these types of opportunities. So we're going to watch these new rising talents with great interest. We're going to try to figure out where they came from. How did they get to where they're at? What happened over the course of their developmental lifespan that allowed them to be who they are? Can anybody do it? Or is it reserved for the special few? Well, I have to honestly say that, you know, and I wrote this in our book, The Performance Plan, greatness is up for grabs. Here's the issue, though. You have to define what that greatness is. And it's very different for everybody out there. If we go back to a conversation we had with Jim Fannin a few years ago, when Frank Thomas got voted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, Jim Fannin had worked with Frank Thomas at that point for, I think, all of his career, even prior to his Major League Baseball career. And Jim shared with us Frank's approach to goal setting and what his goals were right from the get-go. It wasn't to be a professional baseball player. It wasn't to be an all-star or a gold glove winner. It was to be in the Hall of Fame. That was the goal from the get-go. And there's a lot to be learned there, ladies and gentlemen. No matter what you're doing, there is real power in thinking big. Now, can you get there? Can we all get there? We don't know until we go through the process. But setting limitations on yourself from the get-go in terms of goals and objectives can be debilitating in trying to tap into the potentials. So set those goals high. I'm telling you right now, set them high and go for it. Surround yourself with good people, search out information, and see how far you can go. Again, we don't know how far you can go until you've gone through the process. And what does that process look like? Well, there's fundamentals, most certainly, and these have to be addressed, but the process is going to be different for everybody based on a number of factors. Your support structure, your socioeconomic resources, your surroundings, your environment, the coaching staff, the kids you play with, the people around you, for sure, the facilities, resources, and even the climate you grow up in. Jamie Reed from the Texas Rangers called it weather protected. Athletes in the north are weather protected. They can't play, let's say, baseball year round. They can't play outdoor sports year round. They have to go indoors. And that has historically given them an advantage. One, they're multi-sport athletes. They're not playing a sport year-round. Two, they're getting away from playing the game, so they don't have quite the rate of overuse injuries. They may lack a little bit in game knowledge or game experience, but that's easily made up when you get to college or into the professional game. They typically have a better skill set because, again, they're not playing the game year-round. They're forced indoors where they have to break the game down and work on skills, work on sections of the game, and maybe even other positions that they normally wouldn't get exposure to if they were just playing. So where you live can have a massive impact simply because of the climate. Not only that, there's other factors that are sort of determined by your location or where you live. Take your youth sport organizations, for example. If you're in a sport where there's a January 1st cutoff date, when they tier and group kids together, if there's a January 1st cutoff date, imagine if your birthday is at the start of that year or at the end of that year. Let's say you have a cutoff date of January 1st for that particular team, that particular age group. On that team, you can have a player that could be almost an entire year older than another player on that team. What do you think happens? Well, that older player is probably going to be a little more mature, maybe even bigger and stronger, and he's going to get more opportunities. He's not necessarily more skilled. He's just more developed at that point in time. So there's lots of talk about trying to overcome this relative age effect where you have a kid who's 1 year older than another kid playing in the same game. it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and a lot of kids are losing out. So you have to be careful there. Another issue in terms of where you live is something called the birthplace effect. And this is discovered by a Canadian sociologist, but they found that the majority of top performing athletes don't come from large centers. They don't come from the big cities. They come from the small communities. And actually, the smaller, the better, for a number of reasons. And we've talked about that on the show a bunch of times. And I think when we actually aired that episode, it was really interesting because we jokingly got emails and calls from our listeners saying they're looking to buy or move to smaller communities so their kids could have a better opportunity to succeed in sport. Imagine growing up in a small community. I did, man. We could walk into the local arena. We didn't have to even, we just had to go stop by the house, grab the key, turn the lights out when you leave, boys. We used to skate till 1 a.m. till our moms came down and dragged us home. And because the community was so small, if you wanted to play on every sport team at school, plus the club teams in the community, you could. Because there was a good chance that they wouldn't have enough players to field a team. So you saw the kids who had an interest in sport playing on virtually every team. So they're multi-sport athletes growing up. So it's interesting that where you live can have such an impact on your development. It doesn't mean you have to move. It just means you have to be aware of these issues. You can make this happen. There's incredible athletes that come from big cities. It just so happens the majority of them come from smaller centers. So just fantastic conversation. And again, we're going to be watching the Major League Draft, the NBA Draft. We're going to be watching the top players in the NFL and soccer. We're certainly going to be watching the NHL players who are coming into the league and joining the junior ranks to see how they fare. Because there's a lot to learn there. Where did they come from? And when you hear conversations of these young talents talking about the support structures around them, the parents, the coaches, there is a real common thread there. Things that we're calling fundamentals. It can be incredibly different athlete to athlete, but there's fundamentals we find have to happen. Or if you make them happen, might increase your odds of success or chasing down the dream. And that's what it's all about, chasing down the dream for sure. Okay, listen, let's cut out for a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get to a rare crush rant that was spurred on by a question that came into the mailbag from Doug talking about the developmental process that we have for our young athletes and some of the issues that I think we need to address. And this happened on terrestrial radio last week. I'm going to share it with you because I've been getting a lot of emails about it. And you guys can listen. Let us know if you agree or if you're going to vote me off the island. I'd love to hear what you think. That's coming up right after this on Crush Performance.
This is Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information with Jeff Crushell. Get in the action and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Thanks for sticking around over the break. Listen, we're your weekly source for performance information, questions, comments, smart remarks. As the man said, get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can write to us, info@CrushPerformance. Well, as promised, I wanted to get to a rant. I went off a little bit on a tangent last week on terrestrial radio, and I wanted to share it here on the podcast for all of you who listen in from around the world. Because I don't normally express hard opinions. I try to keep an open mind and look at all the data, but we had a great question come in from Doug talking about the process of athlete development and some of the systems out there. And I just sort of went off and I was surprised. It's received quite a response. We've gotten a lot of emails, a lot of letters. We've gotten people DMing us over Twitter and messaging us on Facebook because of this little rant that I want to share with you here. So have a listen and get to us with your thoughts. Let us know what you think. And you can either agree with me or vote me off the island if you don't agree with me. But I think there's a lot of interesting points here we need to consider, and we need to talk about this more. And based on all of the messages we're getting back right now, I think for the most part, people agree out there. Whether you feel I'm right or not, we need to have this discussion. So here it is, my rant from late last week. Have a listen, and we'll talk to you on the other side. And so here's a question that came into the Crush mailbag from Doug. It says, Crusher, we hear you talk about sleep and rest, nutrition, posture, and then movement being your top priorities. But if vision is so powerful, why isn't vision a top priority? And what about skill development? You can't play sport if you don't have skills. Doug, great, great question. So this has to be taken in context of the big picture. And I think sometimes, everybody, this is where we kind of lose sight of the developmental process. We all want that tangible, outcome-oriented training, which is what it's all about. We know kids play sport to play the game. So what I'm saying strategically around that game, if we can develop an education system that encourages or lets kids know the importance of sleep and rest, if we can talk to them about nutrition and hydration in the context of something they're really, really interested in, it might be more meaningful than us just harping on our kids at home or in school or wherever it might be, and the message goes in one ear and out the other ear. If we could connect it to something they love and they're passionate about, that works. Trust me, it works at the highest level of sport, and it certainly works for kids as well. And then, of course, it gets a little more technical when we talk about posture, but that's easily taken care of just through a really good warm-up period. Doesn't matter how old your kids are. It could be the little duffers, 8, 9, 10 years of age. Just get them running forwards, backwards. Teach them to side shuffle. We've got 16, 17 year olds that can't side shuffle well, leave alone do a karaoke or a grapevine step. So incorporate those into your warm-up. And that comes into this, the whole movement part. Now, Doug, listen, this is a great question, and I don't want to overcomplicate things because it's very, very simple. Or at least it can be if we lay it out properly. So the movement side is the fundamentals for sport performance. Every single movement in sport comes from the basis of athletic performance. So what we talk about in our programs is if our athletes are capable and well-rounded and can do things that the coaches need them to do in the game, the coaches can coach them to the next level. And listen, if you want to keep a kid involved in sport, just let them have some success. And there's no better way to have success than to execute something you haven't done before. It doesn't mean a kid has to be the best. It doesn't mean they even have to be really, really good. They just have to be getting better. With the praise of the coach and the parents, it is all powerful. But if all you do is practice a sport-specific movement, say hitting or just skating, let's take skating for example. If all we do is skate and play hockey, you're going to reach your ceiling of performance very, very early. The ability to get beyond your ceiling or to push that ceiling of performance or potential up is very, very limited if all you do is play the game or practice the skills of the game. You need to do things that will help the athlete build and things that will support the skills that need to be executed, the things the coaches need them to do. You know, I was working with a hockey agent here a few years ago, and we were just analyzing the skating strides of these unbelievable great talents, junior hockey players. And we got to this one player who for years had been going to skating coaches, and we're looking at his stride, and he was one of the top players in his age group, and we're looking at his stride, and he was a fast skater, very agile, could corner well, but we knew that the stride that he had was okay for the level he was at, but it wasn't going to take him to the promised land. It wasn't going to take him as far as he wanted to go on his wish list, if you know what I'm talking about, to the top of the game. So that comes back to the idea of, you know, what you've done to get to where you're at is not going to take you to the next level. It can't, because you're not the same athlete. You're not the same player anymore. You need to continually develop progressively. So what got you here will not get you there, but you have to get to here in order to get there. It's kind of a riddle in a way, but Doug, this is what I'm talking about. So listen, if we're going to maximize the skill development in our sports, look, our athletes need to get that recommended amount of sleep at a bare minimum. And we have the studies, and we've talked about them endlessly on the show about the benefits of sleep loading or sleep extension. It is an absolute, the positive impact sleep has on sport performance. But for everybody out there, it also has a massive positive impact on cognitive and academic skills. So school grades go up, mood goes up, depression goes down, injuries go down. I mean, there's very little downside to getting more sleep, and yet we've got this sort of macho sort of thing going on. Hey, man, I don't need that much sleep. No, no, you do need sleep. Whether you feel it or not, you do need sleep, and you would be better for it. So talking about that sleep is ground base, number one. And when we talk about rest, recovery, and recuperation, this is a big conversation, and we'll get into this more. I could talk about it all day. If you want to learn more, write to us at the website, for sure. I could talk about this all day, but when we look at an athlete's program, when we look at everything they're doing in their lives, and it doesn't matter how old they are, it could be our pro athletes. We do this with our pro athletes, by the way. And the key here is for our pro guys is coordinating everything with the skill coaches and the competitive schedule. But all of our programs are built around the quality amount of rest an athlete can get on a day, week, or month. We try to program it. I like it, at least. We try to program it for 7 days. We try to keep 7 days out. And if we've got a good routine going, magic. You know, so we look at the intensity and the volume of work outside of the sport performance training, team practices or individual practices or competition and games, right? So those are all factored in. And then we look at how much rest we actually have. That's how we determine the intensity and the volume and even what type of work we're going to do in the busy, busy schedule of an athlete. Now, if you got a young athlete who, let's say, is playing at one of these academies, he's at a volleyball academy, let's say, and so he's playing for his academy team, then he's playing for a club team, then he's got a club practice, and he's got an academy practice, and then maybe he's got a hitting coach, he's probably got a strength coach, maybe a nutritionist, probably a psychologist, and you got this busy schedule. And then, oh yeah, we got to keep the grades up, so we've got homework. And is he working a part-time job? Look, if he wants to take his girl or a girl to the movies, or if he wants to go, you know, out hitting golf balls with the guys, or going to kart racing with his buddies, he's got to be able to pay for that. So is he working a part-time job? All of these things have to come into play. Then we program the work. Unfortunately, everywhere I look, it's opposite. We're going the opposite direction. We look at practices. We're over competing in every single sport, way too many games. And again, this is a conversation sidebar right now. This is a conversation we should have right now. Take my daughter's U17 soccer team. So I've been coaching these girls for 5 years now. It's a great, awesome group. It's a community league soccer. All right. Some of the girls, they were in club soccer. That was just too busy for them. They stepped out. They weren't having fun anymore. And so they just stepped into the community league and we just have fun. You know, we win or lose, we don't know. We always talk to the girls, hey, we're not here to win. We're just here to play good soccer. Winning will be the outcome of a good process. Ask any girl on our team any day if they're playing to win. And that's what they'll say. At least that's what I hope they say, because that's what we talk about on the team all the time. So, of course, we just started the season and we look at the competitive schedule because I'm trying to set up, you know, sort of our strategy for the early part of the season. This is how the schedule was programmed, all right, to start the season. And again, you got to understand, we only have so much time that we can practice as a team before the season starts. They really restrict that. And then all of a sudden, guess what? 3 games in 5 days to start the season. We have 20 girls on our team. We can hardly field a team right now because they're all hurt or broken. And it has a lot to do with the lack of preparation. This is community soccer. It's not like club soccer where the girls are training and practicing for the game. I think if we look across the board in every single sport, here's what I would like to see. Hey, write me. Tell me if you disagree with me here. Am I onto something? You know, I talk to the guys who help coach the team, and I talk to parents everywhere about this, and I think we might be onto something when we talk about this. It seems right to me. But if we reevaluated all of these fun leagues, and we look at the dropout rates that are astronomical right now, it's off the charts. Kids are dropping out because they're burnt out, and they're hurt, and they're tired, and they're not having fun anymore. Listen, here's what I would do. If I were in charge, if I were the king of sport, let's say, I might run a campaign. You guys can vote for me or vote me off the island one way or the other. But let me ask you, does this make sense to you guys? Does this resonate with you? If we took the start of this soccer season, and instead of piling in 3 games in the first 5 days, what if we had 1 game a week for the first 5 weeks, and then we started ramping up the games later in the season? One, when they've got the skill set back, when the girls learn to play each other, because I think we have 9 new players on the team, and they get in shape. And not that the girls are out of shape. I mean, they're playing school sports, and they're doing other things. They're pretty healthy girls for the most part, but they're not soccer ready. They're just not soccer ready, and our injuries prove it. And, you know, you look across the boards of stats and injuries for U17 females, non-contact knee injuries. It's the highest risk group in all of sport for non-contact knee injuries. And yet here we are slamming in full tilt games, and these girls play hard. So same thing we're seeing at the start of the baseball season. Overtraining year-round hockey. We're seeing the same thing with these volleyball clubs. Certainly the soccer, the clubs, it is way out of control. And last week on the show, when we talked to Jamie and we mentioned it earlier in the show about this weather protected, we're starting to lose that in the northern hemispheres. It was a huge advantage for our athletes. You know, we couldn't be playing baseball all year around. Or in the summer, you know, you might have gone to a hockey camp, but you weren't playing spring hockey, summer hockey, fall hockey into winter league. And we are honestly, again, I'll say it, and you can agree with me or disagree, the way our system is set up, we're not developing the best talent. We haven't created an environment long-term that allows these kids to really, really harness their potential. And again, it's not, the objective is not to build high-performance athletes. It's if we create a really good system, there'll just be more kids getting opportunities if they want to go that route. And for the ones that don't, well, listen, they're going to have more fun. They're going to get better at their sport, and maybe they'll just play recreational for life. All these things come into play. So again, Doug, getting back to it, sorry, crush sidebar over, but Doug, getting back to it, that's how we set up our programs. We look at the entire schedule the athlete has, and then we determine what kind of work, the volume and the intensity of work that's going to best support their health and their ability to play the game. Then nutrition, hydration backs that right up. And then we look at posture because, listen, if their posture is off, they're at higher risk of injury, period, period. That's how it works. So there's lots of things you guys can do in your warmups or in a small training period a couple times a week at the end of your practices to help your athletes correct their posture, range of motion around critical joints, and even working on their core. Great stuff. And that's just general health stuff, but also great for sport performance. And then movement. This is where we really start getting into the sport-specific stuff. After those are established, the mental game for those athletes who need it. Some do, some don't. Some need it more, some don't. Visual training can help everybody. As we talk with Ryan Harrison today, fantastic stuff. Everybody can be doing that. It's very simple. You do have to know what you're doing. Don't get me wrong. It's not that simple, but it's an important part of sport performance, especially for those athletes that need it. And then you can start branching off into individual programs, but also then start really, really tapping into the skill development. Skill development is sort of a last priority when it comes to athlete development. Now, kids want to play, they want to have fun, and that's where you start working it in. Nothing better than seeing a kid throw a ball properly and get it across the field or make contact. Or a young kid, you know, kicking a corner cross, beautiful in soccer, or take that one-timer shot in hockey, volleyball. It's great to see all these skills come together, but we tend to overcompete and we tend to undertrain. And I think we need to make a shift there. So anyway, great question. Sorry about the rant, everybody, but I just think that there's so much more opportunity out there to help our athletes get better. So there you go, a rare crush rant. What do you guys think? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you have opinions? Let us know. Write to us. Crushperformance.com is the website. Info@crushperformance is our email. You can also direct message me on Twitter if we follow each other, or write to us on Facebook for sure. But I'd like to get your opinions on this. It's an important conversation. There's a lot of issues out there right now that we need to address. Because again, going back to that show a couple weeks ago with Jamie Reed from the Texas Rangers, where I posed the question, are we destroying more talent than we're creating? I think we are. I don't think we've created really good environments for our young athletes or our young people who are interested in sport to truly aspire. Now, I do like the long-term athlete development program in Canada. It's genius. And the goals and objectives there, as we've mentioned time and time again, are not to produce high-performance athletes. It's to help athletes have success through the different stages of development so they can just simply enjoy sport. And at the end of it, if they decide to pursue college sports, Olympic-style national sports, or even professional sports, maybe they'll get that opportunity if the process is right. So there you have it. Do you agree or do you disagree? Are you going to vote me off the island? Or are there subjects in there that we maybe missed? Things we need to discuss? Let us know. Let's strike up that conversation because that's what it's all about. It's very, very hard to fix anything if we're not talking about it, if we're not looking at ways to make it better. And I think there's huge opportunities in the area of sport and athlete development to make some massive adjustments and to make the system better. Let's talk about it. That's what it's all about. Okay, everybody. Well, that's the show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Coming up in the next few weeks on Crush Performance, we'll be talking with Crush favorite Dana Santos from Mobility Maker. If you remember our conversation with her, and you can go onto our YouTube channel and check out our animation where she talks about strategies for sleep. Dealing with anxiety How important is how we breathe? And what strategies can we use to help our athletes and ourselves deal with daily stress? We're going to have a fantastic conversation with Dana. And after that, we're going to talk organizational performance. In 2019, one of our main themes is organizational performance, cultures, and leadership. Well, we're going to talk with one of the leading minds in this area, John Gordon. If you haven't seen his stuff, go to johngordon.com. That's johngordon.com and check it out before this show. It'll give you some context and it'll also expose you to the great world of John Gordon. That's coming up in the next few weeks. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in once again, and we'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to ride.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
This week on Sitting Ringside, we talk to Bushwhacker Luke, 50-plus years in the wrestling business. What a career. He talks about breaking in at the age of 15 in New Zealand, going off to Australia and then Canada, and how he wrestled in almost every territory that there was as one of the Kiwis or the sheep herders. Amazing stories and great stuff. And then his trip to meet Vince McMahon and the reaction that they had when they were told they were going to become babyfaces after 30 plus years of being heels. All that and so much more, bunch of good Puerto Rico stuff and the 1991 Royal Rumble story and so much more. Be sure to check it out where podcasts are found. And if you don't already, please subscribe to Sitting Ringside.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.